She'll be offering four different dinners at different prices. Thank you so very much for what you do and for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Yeah. Bye-bye. That would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
It's 1 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. Stay tuned. Coming up, the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. Don't touch that dial. Can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict. Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us is always the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
It is indeed I.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, good. Got my Christmas tree.
Yeah. So,
they're just laying all over the street now. They're free. It's great. Some of them are even like kind of have some tinsel in them and stuff. And,
look out for the ones with the chipmunks in them.
I made that mistake once. Never again.
Well, we were talking, Kevin and I were talking about this because typically I keep the tree up until the Feast of the Epiphany, of course. And
when is that?
That's the 6th.
Okay.
And actually, the city is starting their collection on the 6th. And I don't want to miss it because there's a later one. So, and then we thought the worst thing is when you take that tree, you love it, you decorate it, you think it, you tell it it's the prettiest tree in the
right.
world.
I love you,
tree. And then you literally kick it to the curb. And we just had this image of the tree out there on the curb,
what
like are, trying to peek in the windows to see,
well,
what did I do wrong? What happened? I was like, they
told
loved
me told me I was pretty.
They told me I was pretty. They let me stay in their home. They were just loved me, and now here I am on the curb. So it doesn't pay to anthropomorphize things. It really doesn't.
It's sort of a life lesson there. Yeah. Reminds
Star
me
for a day.
A lot of my relationships.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Once the needles start to fall, nobody loves you anymore.
Yeah.
You probably noticed
that. Well,
you
used to be pretty, but yeah, right. No matter how much I water you, they keep falling.
Dry off. And
all desiccated.
Desiccated, yeah. That's the fate that awaits us all.
There was a great joke. A lot of people love the show Community.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know if you ever watched it.
I have a couple times,
You know, I liked it. I didn't blow me away. But they had one great scene one time where the main character held up a pencil. And
sure.
He said, this is a pencil. And everybody's going, okay. And he goes, his name is Wally. And they go, oh, okay. And then he snapped it in half. And everybody went, oh, Wally!
Well, typically they stick your head in this grinding machine. So at least that was quick.
Good point.
Well, that's what you're aiming for when you stick it in the machine.
So the House is going to try to elect a speaker today.
Oh, yeah.
And I just looked at C-SPAN, and the headline says, first vote fails to elect a speaker.
We're off to the races, folks.
I love the old-timey conventions, like the presidential nominating conventions, where they would go like 107 ballots deep. Those were fun.
That was back when things mattered.
Yeah.
Well, who do Elon and Vivek favor?
That's
Civil War is already beginning in the party, right? I mean,
I guess.
I mean, Elon says we want, you know, because this is what they do. These rich a-holes, if I may say that, they get people on these visas, these work visas. They pay them crap because they sponsor them on the work visas.
Yeah.
And then they let them go as soon as they, you know, strip mine their brains.
Yeah.
I mean,
like
they're
the tree
all
at the curb.
Yeah, they just like the tree at the curb. So they're all in favor of that, right? But of course, the people that love Trump the most are all racist jerks. They don't want smart foreign people coming out either, because they don't want anybody who's not, you know, true blue.
Yeah.
And so already Trump has told people to do something on X, has told the MAGA racist to do something anatomically impossible.
Yeah.
Right in the face.
Musk
apparently.
Did.
Yeah. Musk. I'm sorry. Who did I say?
Trump. I think
no,
he said
Musk
Trump.
Did. Yeah, Musk did. And so they're already starting the infighting, which you knew was going to happen.
Yeah,
so. And he isn't even president yet.
Musk?
Musk isn't even president yet. Yeah. I just can't get over the fact that to run the Department of Government Efficiency, they need two guys.
Yeah.
Like, what?
You know, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I know, and I could look it up, but I don't, because it's
Doogie, I think.
it's a cryptocurrency.
Yeah,
and there's probably a way to pronounce it, but and they have like a dog as a logo. So,
yeah, doggy.
So is that doggy?
I think.
Oh, doggy style.
It was
apparently.
Doji.
Yeah.
Or dodgy.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought I'd pronounce it dodge, like they're going to dodge all these taxes. So, well, what do you expect? I mean, you got Trump, and you got J.D. Vance,
sure,
and they're both married to immigrants, which is, again, immigrants doing jobs Americans will not do.
And God bless them. I totally understand. If some trailer park mama does not want to bed Donald Trump, I say good for her.
Give somebody a visa. Yes.
Bring him over from the bride basket of Europe. I mean, that's what I say.
Didn't Melania get like a genius visa or something? I think
well,
she did.
Yes, because she has a unique and unusual talent, which we will not disclose.
I don't think it's all that unique. But
not really.
So one vote down for the...
One vote down. Okay, so
for the speaker. So,
So who's the compromise candidate if they can't get?
I don't know if
they can't get Johnson in there.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Henry Clay or somebody.
Dig him up.
We are going back in time. We might as well just
that's true. The great compromiser.
Dig things up here. So what do you think Republicans think about how they feel about trust in elections nowadays?
Oh, they love it.
They love it. They think the Republicans' trust in accuracy of U.S. elections jumps after Trump's win.
Yep.
The majority of Republicans say they're confident the 2024 voter count was accurate. It's a turnaround from GOP voters' skepticism about U.S. elections after... The last 4 years when they thought all the elections were rigged. But apparently when you win, then they're honest. So.
Well, this is the University of Michigan did a survey of consumers. They did a longitudinal study from 2017 to 2024 asking people's feelings about the economy based on their party identification. And apparently Republicans thought the economy was going really great from 2017 to 2020, and then it just plummeted, apparently. and then for the last, basically, like 2021 on, only 40% of Republicans, and this is, you know, this is a bouncing number, but around 40%, 43-44%, think that the economy is looking okay or have a positive economic outlook. And now the only thing that's changed, of course, is, you know, their guy is in charge in reality.
But he's not.
Utterly shifted.
He's not even.
And so it's flipped up again. Yeah. Now they're above 80% say the economy is on the right track. Let's see if that helps your grocery bill. Because I think he's completely forgotten about that.
What are eggs going?
You know, well, he created the concept of groceries. You heard that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now he's just like ugly stepchild.
He built in the process where you have to show your driver's license to get groceries, too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He talked more than once about how you have to show an ID to get groceries.
That's when it's not funny anymore.
Yeah. So in October, 23% of Republicans thought that the elections were fair and honest.
Yeah.
And now 64%. So it tripled since their guy won.
Yep. So, I mean, Trump is basically like some giant gravitational object that warps all, you know, everything that's near it, right, in some bizarre pretzel-shaped form.
Well, he spent the last 4 years railing about immigrants, and then, but as soon as Musk said he wanted some cheap programmers, you know, Trump goes, "Oh, that's a great program. I love that program." Yeah, and he was, but he was talking about the one they use to get like housekeepers.
By the way,
stuff.
There's supposed to be another migrant surge coming up from Venezuela now.
No, there is not.
Through Mexico. Yeah, well, there won't be because once they are in charge, that will not exist.
Schrodinger's caravan. Yeah,
yeah. By the way, I have to say, you know me. I love being contrary. And I liked Carter okay. He was an okay ex-president. But I was actually,
he was a good ex-president.
It kind of thrilled me a little bit to see George Will this week really ripping Carter a new one. I mean, he described him as, and this is absolutely right, I didn't vote for Carter either time. Carter was the first non-incumbent elected from the South since the Civil War and the most conservative Democratic president since Grover Cleveland. Thank you. Could somebody remember that? He was the guy that, beginning with the airlines, led this deregulation thing, which, you know, basically we've been paying for ever since, and nominated the guy to the Federal Reserve who created the giant recession of the early 1980s. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, yeah, he did a lot of good things, but let's not forget that he was also, I mean, this was the guy that reinstituted the draft, for God's sakes, in 1980. Yeah. Well, once, so let's be a little balanced in our accolades, shall we?
Yeah. I mean, well, once Reagan started picking up some momentum and the Russians invaded Afghanistan, then Carter started like moving. Trying to move way to the right.
He started parting his hair on the other side. I never have figured out what that was about.
It's a little psychology. Yeah, it's like,
now I part it with my right hand.
I'm different. I don't know. But
I think it was Parallel Universe Carter. That's what
it could be. Yeah. Did he have a goatee?
Well, he probably shaved it off.
Oh, okay. But
it
was smart.
Yeah,
smart. He's a smart guy.
Not every one of those evil alternates are, you know, letting it all hang
are
out.
Are they dumb?
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I mean, he started pushing for, you know, more military spending, as you said, brought the draft back. And even just his rhetoric got more and more hard line at that point. Yeah. So, you know, and it's the old line that we've seen played out over and over again since then, that when given a choice between a Republican and a Republican light, they'll take a Republican.
Well, the Shah of Iran came to the United States because Carter acquiesced to all of his friends on the Trilateral Commission and said, yeah, I guess we got to let him in.
Yeah.
I mean, he knew that was going to lead to trouble. There's quotes from him saying, this is going to be a big mistake, and he did it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, not to blame him. Obviously, the Iranians who took those hostages, they were acting of their own free will. But, I mean, it was an outrage because we had been propping up the Shah for, at that point, 25 years or something? And he had a tyrannical regime with a secret police that tortured people and so on. So, you know, you take this guy back into the United States, it's like, okay, what do you think those people are going to think? You know, I mean, it's like, oh, they're propping him up again, you know? I mean, stuff like that. It's
we
like,
just brought him here to die.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, but they didn't know that.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just kind of like, again, I don't want to get on his case too much the other way either. I'm just like, I mean, let's have a balanced perspective.
He was
here.
The greatest ex-president, I think. Yeah. You know, he did a lot of really, really wonderful things once he was out of office. But I think he was either overwhelmed or just couldn't handle the various compromises.
He was kind of a prig, though. I mean, he was calling out Mother Teresa. Oh, leper's fair.
But he did some good things. I mean,
he was pushing. Now I'm just being obnoxious. You know,
back in like the late 70s,
I'm just trying to get a rise out of everybody.
He was pushing for some renewable energy.
Yeah, sources, he was.
Which was,
he was.
You know.
No, not he was really good on the environment.
They put solar panels on the roof of the White House, and then when Reagan got elected, the two things he did to undo what Carter had done, he had the solar panels torn down for some reason. It's like, they're already there. Just leave them there. That's free electricity. But he had to tear them down as, you know, again, it's like parting his hair on the wrong different side. It's like, you know, this is what I stand for.
Right.
And then the other thing he did is he brought liquor back into the White House. Because Carter, as a Baptist, wouldn't let him have liquor in the White House.
Yep. He only drank in his heart.
So I've got a leftover Halloween holiday story.
Okay, sure.
And it's just too good to let it drift away.
Okay.
So the, you ever seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life?
I have.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yep. Good. I'm glad you've seen that cult classic.
Yeah.
But it's obviously everybody's seen it.
Uncle Billy's an idiot.
Probably more.
That's what I learned.
He's the real villain.
He's the real villain.
So it was, you know, a lot of people love watching it at Christmas time. And, and it was on, the Prime streaming service.
Okay.
And, you know, the Jeff Bezos owned.
What is it?
Service. Yeah, good point. Well, there's like four of them. They carved up the whole country.
And, yeah, yeah.
And that's part of his 25% of the country. Sure. But anyway, so it was on Prime.
Okay.
And but it was an abridged version for some reason of the movie. I mean, it's kind of a long movie, but you know, but it's a good movie. I mean, you know, everybody's probably sick of it by now because it's been around and so much.
But I like the colorized version where they all look like Cupid dolls. That's the best.
So anyway, so they have this abridged version.
A bridge.
It's probably
there
still
is a bridge in it.
There, no, well, yeah, sort of. There's it's a shorter version. It's, okay. It's on Prime. It's probably still out there, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And they chopped off the whole part of the little alternative universe with the Potterville. Of what happened to everybody if George Bailey hadn't been born or if he died or...
Oh, the mega millionaire megalomaniac?
Yeah.
Like when they wanted to like kind of be like more positive about that guy. Wow, I'm surprised.
So the guy
headline in the Washington Post, Scrooge not so bad.
Potter, job creator.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, they cut out the whole thing about how the bar was so sleazy and everybody was living in these little Potter shacks and
Potter camps.
Potter camps, and everybody was broke and it was dark and dirty. And it's like they cut that off. They cut up like it's like 20 minutes of the movie, I think.
I thought you were going to say they cut out the part where he was contemplating his own demise.
No,
that's in there.
apparently, it jumps right from like somewhere in there until the end when all of a sudden people are showing up with money in his house and they've got the happy ending.
Because money makes everybody happy.
So they didn't want to show the greedy rich guy who was screwing everybody else and ruining
their lives. Because capitalism, you know, it's got a few kinks in it, but it'll work itself out.
Yeah, they said there were some rights involved music or something. But that's why this...
Big stinking lie.
That's why this has been on... You know, TV and its unabridged version for about 50 years now, continuously.
But this is the thing that Krugman talks about this. Paul Krugman has talked about this for years. The thing that makes these people so obnoxious, these multi billionaires, is not that they rule everything, but they want us to worship them for it. You know, any sign that you're feeling a little grumpy about the way things have devolved is, you know, that we can't have that, for goodness sakes.
Well, yeah, it's like you said, Musk this week X'd out. Blank your face, you know, if you disagree with me.
Most of those guys haven't seen theirs in years.
Speaking of rich people.
Yes, let's.
Rolex hikes watch prices by as much as 8% because the price of gold has surged.
Oh, wow.
Because people start hoarding gold when they get...
That's how you know they really trust the economy.
They get freaky about stuff.
By the way, Tesla sales are down. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
For the first time. Yeah.
I thought they were exploding.
No. The sales. I'm talking about the sales. Yeah. No, they fell slightly in 2024. It's the first annual decline in the company's history. And you know why?
Huh.
Because there are other companies in China and Europe and even here in the good old U.S. of A. that have been competing. So the company said on yesterday, that it delivered 1,789,226 vehicles worldwide during the year, which is a decline from the year before.
Wow.
So during the last 3 months of 2024, Tesla delivered 495,000, and that was down from about, that delivered 495,000, yeah. So that was up from 484,000 in the last quarter of 2023, but still overall sales were down. So it peaked, it's going up a little bit, but not much.
Okay.
But overall down. Hey, The Atlantic decided to invest a little money, you know. Legacy media, as Musk would say, legacy media must die, which he means media I don't control. They've decided that they're going to put a little bit of money into the politics staff. So they're gearing up. The Atlantic is gearing up, basically, to go after some of the big stories of 2025, which are all, of course, going to be political stories. And what they did was that to bolster their staff in Washington, D.C., they stole people from the Washington Post, basically. They headhunted. And, of course, the way things are going at the Washington Post, unfortunately, there were lots of people who succumbed and went over to the Atlantic. But the hires are a sign of increased ambition for the Atlantic. They'd really like to be your, apparently, again, legacy media destination for all things political. And so they're going to have a pretty crack team, apparently. But they're just preparing for what they think will be months of turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
And they need right now they have about 350 employees at The Atlantic, and they're expanding that number to basically cover the soon-to-be, and I hate to say this word out loud, Trump White House. First time I've actually said it.
Well, the White House, or the Washington Post,
yeah.
their slogan has been "Democracy dies in darkness."
Yes.
But they've shortened it now. It just says "Democracy dies."
Oh, yeah. So
right to the point.
Yeah. No shilly-shallying. Hey, the Treasury Department was hit by a hack this week. Did you hear this?
I saw that.
Yep. It says some state-sponsored actor in China, that's what they're describing it, hacked the Treasury Department. It gained access to the workstations and government employees, so not much. They were all on a break, so I really...
I'll just run by these little mouse jigglers now.
China, apparently for months now, they've been trying to penetrate deeper into our telecommunications system. And I'm sure the crack team that the incoming president is putting together will really know what to do about all this stuff.
Baron?
Yeah, and Inspector Clouseau. Get that Clouseau guy. I really like him.
Yeah. And Hannibal Lecter.
Lecter, too.
He's smart.
He'll eat their lunch. And more.
So you want to hear about mice?
I do. I'd love to hear about mice.
Mice, when they get a little head start in life, it makes a big difference.
Oh, seriously.
Lucky breaks in a male mouse. It's only for males, though. Male mouse's youth can lead to large advantages in adulthood. There's a new study.
Are we talking about mice now?
We're talking about mice.
Okay, all right. Okay, so advantage the mouse early, and it has dividends.
And for the rest of its life.
Yeah,
it's a study.
What if you advantage, like, all the mice? What happens then?
Oh, then it's chaos. that's anarchy or socialism or something.
Something. All right,
it's something I don't like. Yeah. And it's socialism or fascism or Nazism.
Whatever.
Or something. But no, a new study titled "Competitive Social Feedback Amplifies the Role of Early Life Contingency in Male Mice" was published in Science, and it explored how luck influences individual outcomes in mice. The researchers found the effect is most pronounced in groups where there is a competition, in this case, male mice, who vie for food, territory, and mates. Luck did not have the same long-term impact on female mice, who face less resource competition in the large outdoor enclosure used in the experiment. Mm. One of the researchers said, we get these competitive feedback loops. You start with two genetically identical individuals who are the same, and through social competition, you get a divergence between animals who are consistently winning and then are more likely to win in the future, and animals who are consistently losing and so are more likely to lose in the future.
Uh-huh. And I assume that only applies to mice.
It only applies to mice. Yeah. It doesn't apply to
general
humans thing. Or anything like that. Yeah. So.
Okay. It's good to know.
Yep. Even mice. Yeah, got like little mice nepo babies.
Yeah. Oh my God. Hey, I said some nasty things about Carter, so let me give you one positive news story I read about him this week, and that was the news story that mentioned that he had been sort of kind of endorsed at one point by Hunter S. Thompson. Carter was giving a speech. He was a speaker. This was in May of 74, and he was like the third speaker or something at the University of Georgia's annual Law Day ceremony. I think he was done being governor by that time, actually. So he started talking about basically about the issue, of course, of the South, and really for all of us. He said in his speech, the powerful and influential have carved out for themselves or inherited a privileged position in society, thereby locking in an unjust status quo. He went on to talk about literacy tests, which were used with a great deal of smirking to prevent black people from voting. He talked about schemes by corrupt judges and lawyers to cheat African-Americans out of money and land and sentencing disparities. In the room at the time during this speech was Hunter S. Thompson. He was the only reporter to show up. He was not especially interested in what the governor had to say, but when he remarked that his ideas had been influenced by a close personal friend, Bob Dylan, Mr. Thompson wrote he was roused from his whiskey-induced fog. For the next 2 days, Thompson extolled the Law Day speech and played recordings of it, which culminated in a lengthy and influential endorsement in the June 3rd, 1976 edition of Rolling Stone magazine. Get one today. Intended or not, his account of Mr. Carter's law address had the effect of an endorsement in the midst of the presidential campaign. Okay. So
I had a poster in my office during that election. It was an early version of a Photoshop. You know, it was pretty primitive back then. But it was Jimmy Carter with like long hair and a robe, and it said "JC will save America." I did see Carter. I saw Carter.
That's why I voted for Peter Kameo of the Socialist Workers Party. But at any rate,
I saw Carter during that campaign. He came to Waseca, Minnesota.
Oh, did he?
Which is not too far from Owatonna and Mankato and those places. Yeah. And I think they had something like a Farm Aid type of concert sort of thing.
Sure.
And then they had Carter speaking.
Okay.
And then Hubert Humphrey.
Yeah.
And Walter Mondale.
Golly gosh.
Walter Mondale. They had all the...
all the Spellbinders.
And then, the local...
Then they gave out the lutefisk.
local representative to Congress and stuff. But it was fun. I think it was there. I think it was Waseca. It might have been Crystal Lake or someplace like that.
Yeah, sure.
So I saw him in the flesh. There.
Yeah.
He was pretty good. He was actually pretty funny. I mean, you didn't really... Back then, you didn't get glimpses of whole speeches. You would just get the little snippets they'd play on the evening news. And it was kind of surprising because they painted him as this really serious guy. And when he gave the speech, it was, I know somebody wrote it for him, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah. I noticed
that's how I judge things.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, of course. That's the only way you can.
I'd come out of a meeting at work. Well, how was it? Oh, I got a couple of good laughs.
I killed. I just want to remind people of there was in the Wisconsin State Journal, they mentioned Carter's famous visit to Madison. Back in the day, Kitty Witties, the people, presidential candidates, didn't want to come to Madison because they knew they were going to get roughed up if they did. And Carter got, you remember this?
No.
Or maybe you read the story. He got deluged with people throwing peanuts at him off of roofs and things like that. Yeah. So he went, they were protecting him, and he went into, used to be a restaurant on State Street. I think it was called the Athens Restaurant. And he went in there, and the owner at that time of the restaurant kind of protected him in there while the peanut storm subsided.
The peanut gallery.
But you could go in there for many years back when that establishment still existed. You go in and they had a picture of him with who the man who later became the president of the United States.
Wow.
Big smiles all around. So yeah, we had a rep. We had a bad rep.
Okay. I don't remember that.
Well, I mean, George Wallace came to town and some guy wore an Artie Bremmer face mask. we didn't shilly-shally back in the day. Not like today, be like, oh, would that be too mean? Like, no. We just mean enough.
We should quit calling them weird.
Yeah, we should quit calling them weird. That's so insulting.
Well, The Onion made this famous with one of their great jokes, but Carter had to sell his peanut farm when he was elected because of a conflict of interest. Yeah. And of course, all presidential candidates and all presidents, elected presidents since then have followed that.
Except for his rotundity.
Oh, yeah, never mind. Nobody has to follow any rules anymore.
Yeah, what I read was that he put it in a blind trust,
yeah,
and it was very, very poor. So he didn't have control over it. It was so poorly run that it was in serious debt when he
retired. Did Billy Carter run it?
He probably into a hole in the ground. And then so he did sell off basically the farm, although he kept his house and adjacent properties.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically the farm.
And Lillian. He kept Lillian.
Miss Lillian.
Did you ever have a Billy beer? I had a Billy beer. It was really bad.
No, but I had a friend who had a Billy beer can in his room, like it was, you know, totemic in some way. Well, that's what made my mother a Democrat.
Billy beer?
No, the Democratic National Convention of 76. My mother had always been a very firm Republican. But when they started, she liked Jimmy Carter. She liked Clinton, too. She didn't like Obama at first until he picked Hillary as his Secretary of State. Then she was like, oh, he's great, you know. Hmm. Although, this is one of those stories. It's just, my mother was a low-information voter. She was very naive about things. But very decided, you know. That's the way people often that don't know much are, unfortunately. Like our president-to-be.
I can fly this airplane.
No problem at all. How are going to be?
But that snooty pilot thinks he knows so much.
Everything. But my mother was, I remember her being worried about Obama because she said, I hear that he's, because of course she's living in Kentucky, so she's hearing this from all sides. I hear they say he wasn't born in the U.S. or they say he's a Muslim. And I said to my mother, I said, do you remember John Kerry? Mm-hmm. They said that he was a coward and didn't deserve those medals. And 2 seconds after Bush got reelected or whatever happened the first time, you know, when he got back into office, they didn't say another word about it. She's like, oh, yeah, they lie about that stuff, don't they? I was like, yeah, it's funny.
Ha ha.
Ha ha.
So, all right, we're going to take a brief break, play some announcements, and then I'm going to come back with
a bunch of stuff.
You got anything good?
Well, I got when plants cry, moths make important life decisions.
Oh. I'll have to try that because I haven't had much luck with my system.
Yeah. Look at your plant. See if it's crying. Moths, they swear by it.
Okay. So, and how did COVID affect monkeys' social life?
Ah.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
Hi, I'm Mel from The Mel and Floyd Show.
And I'm Mr. Smarty Pants.
As we say goodbye to 2024, I think we can all agree 2025 is expected to be a peaceful and totally uneventful year.
But of course, occasionally, there will be storm clouds on the horizon.
And storm clouds are bad news when you've got a roof like we've got here at the station.
What a dump.
Well, it's not exactly a dump. But we do need to address some infrastructure issues.
It's Infrastructure Week. In the near future, we'll need to replace our roof as well as our ancient Little House on the Prairie-style windows.
And I know this is hard to believe, but the bidet in Mel and Floyd's personal washroom is only gold-plated.
The horror.
This is where we usually come in and ask you for donations.
Which is exactly what we're going
to
do.
Now is the perfect time to make a donation at WRT to help us keep our building standing and to keep the raccoons out of our studios. You going to eat that?
So go to WRTFM.org, click the orange donate button, and contribute any amount you can afford.
It's a great way to start the new year. I think people should do exactly what those obviously suave and handsome men are suggesting.
I think that was the world premiere of that. So you'll be sick of that eventually.
So pledge now. No, we're always, you know, we are supported by you, the community. Yeah. And so anytime you want to give money, please do so. And sure. It would be nice for us to get some money to fix our roof.
Yeah. And thanks to Betty Davis for coming in and doing her line. She was a pro. I mean, she didn't, you know, no. A
few incantations and she's back from the dead like she never left. It's amazing. Hey, this is a scary story. Speaking of scary, this is a scary story in a couple ways because you have to realize something, Mel, that you may not know right now. I mean, you're a smart guy, so maybe you do know this, but maybe not.
Nah.
When certain plants are under stress, they cry.
Okay.
They make a sound, a very mournful sound of ultrasonic clicks. Did you know that?
No.
No, isn't that frightening? So there are these plants, and they're making noises. And these noises are not just like something that scientists are picking up. Apparently, moths can hear them. And this will interpret basically which plants they lay their eggs on. If a plant is distressed, they kind of stay away from it. According to Raya Seltzer, she's an entomologist at Tel Aviv University, plants emit sounds and insects are really listening to that. They're tuned to that specific sound and they know the meaning and they consider it. This is getting very complicated. It's way too much for me. I have a hard time dealing with people, and let alone everything else.
And moths.
And the researchers worked in a laboratory with the Egyptian cotton leaf worm, which is able to hear, it's a kind of moth, able to hear these ultrasonic clicks. The researchers wanted to know whether female leaf worms would use the sounds to decide where they lay their eggs, which is one of the most important life choices that a Egyptian cotton leaf worm can make.
Yeah.
You know, just like all of us. So, as a first step, they demonstrated...
Are the schools good here?
Exactly.
Are there lots of maggots to eat?
Yeah, lots of maggots. Let's see. The team demonstrated that in its experimental design, females usually preferred to lay eggs on a non-stressed out plant.
Yeah,
I think we can all agree that that's probably the right way to go.
Yep, I would.
And because they're more likely to provide food for the newborn larvae.
Yeah, they'll be healthier
as opposed to a dehydrated one. So once that was established, in other words, they established that they're picky. They're making choices, difficult life choices. Then they devised an experiment to see whether the moths were using these clicks to make that very important decision. So the defining results arrived when the moths were presented with a hydrated tomato plant on one side of the experimental arena. So they have big spaces so moths can mill about.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side was another tomato plant that was healthy and hydrated, but that emitted. So they're not like. Just to let people at home know, they're not tormenting the plants to get the result. They had a healthy plant, but they reproduce the sounds of distress from a dehydrated tomato plant. Mm. And they found, not surprisingly, that the female moths strongly preferred to lay their eggs on the silent, non-stressed-out plant. Now, the doctor here, the professor Seltzer, says that there's probably going to be more research we need to do to find out what else might be going on, because there could be scents and other things. We don't want to say it's just that. This is not like a podcast, people. This is actual knowledge. So they want to
test. Hey, we're a podcast.
Well, yeah, but...
Oh, no, point taken.
Look in the mirror, bud. But... So she says that this is maybe more widespread than just this special kind of moth. And this is a quote. A lot of insects hear ultrasonic, and a lot of plants produce ultrasonic noises under stress. I'm putting my bet on that. So she's betting. She's a betting woman.
All right. So, well, it could just be they don't like the noise.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it'd be like living next to a railroad track.
It's a fire station next door.
Yeah. So my dad was injured in World War II.
Yeah.
And there's a connection here. I'm not
okay.
Just,
did I have a funny look on my face?
Yeah, I was like, what the hell?
my eyes went in several directions.
But he suffered a head injury.
Okay.
And he had trouble. He couldn't stand loud noises.
All right.
So do you know what the first thing he did when he got out of the military?
I don't know.
He bought a house.
Yeah.
Right next to the railroad track. This is back when trains
this
ran.
This is the definition of neurotic.
All
right?
The time. Those goddamn trains! It's like, why did you buy this house?
So it was all fun and games in your house.
Oh, God. You'd be on the phone sometimes, and and you'd have to, like, oh, I got to hang up. A train's coming. I mean, I felt like I was living in Hooterville or something. Because it would be so loud.
Sure.
You just couldn't, you couldn't talk on the phone. But
Well, that's one of the things I love going on the
L. So that's the kind of
going on the L is looking at people's windows. And thinking, you know, you're going along past somebody's second story apartment or something.
Right.
And you're thinking, I wonder how often, many times a day, you know, this train goes back and forth.
Right. How many people have looked in that window?
But you guys didn't get used to it. You had to, or did you? Did you get used to it?
You kind of get used to it. Yeah. So, but, you know.
When you're a kid,
I don't know.
You're
when you're a
anything.
Kid, yeah. We just go out and throw rocks at the train.
My sister and I used to put pennies on the train.
Oh, we did that, too.
Yeah, try to turn the train over.
Yeah, yeah, we did
Somebody
that.
Said that to us. My mother or some other family members said, now, don't put train on, you know, those on the track because it'll derail the train.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Oh, can I have a penny?
Yeah, can I have a few.
So, hey, last week we met, we had a guest, Helena White, came in.
That was great.
Our old pal.
I just want to say something about that. When I see friends of the show like Helena, I think we must be doing something okay. You know what I mean? Like, that person likes us.
Yeah. No, I get it. That's a really nice, smart person.
Yeah,
and,
You know, we must not be too bad.
Terrible, but we talked about how a long time ago she did a project where I forget what probably the Iraq War or something.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure it was.
We've had so many of these.
Yeah, but, you lose count.
But they I think they hung up a sign over a bridge, like over the Beltline or someplace, and said "Honk for Peace." And she would send us cassette tapes.
Yes.
That's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
That with cars honking.
Yep.
And then we talked to her about that last week, and turns out she's doing something similar now with the "Honk for Peace for Gaza."
I assume it's not on a wax cylinder.
So. No, it's here on the computing machine.
Oh, great.
So she said, "Dear Mel and Mr. Smarty Pants, here's a heavily edited sample of the 37 cars who honk for a ceasefire in Gaza in 20 minutes around 4 o'clock on January 1st.
Here.
There wasn't much traffic, as you can imagine. Enjoy." So we're going to see if we can get this to come up here. Honking for peace.
I like the multiples.
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
Oh, I like that one. And there it was. We're honking for peace. So, thank you, Helena. We really appreciate it.
So this is dry January. Lots of people, you know, the World Health Organization says that any alcohol is risky.
Yeah,
so
they want warning labels on it.
They want warning labels, and they're trying to get us to. If you're, you know, sometimes people go cold turkey, and maybe that's not for you. But you know, any even like lessening of alcohol is instantly valuable to you, including to your liver, and of course your blood pressure and your heart and other parts of your body. So many people do a dry January, and the idea is that you give up alcohol for 31 days of the year. And it can be hard. We all know that. But one of the easiest ways to do something that's hard is to let other people know, because we're social creatures. And if other people know, then we're embarrassed to not do what we say we're going to do if we don't do it. So the first thing to let people know, you know, that you're going to do it. Second thing, you should try to replace it with something else. So let's say you are a person who typically
like
has
heroin or something.
A glass of you're not helping. A glass of wine before bed.
Okay.
You might want some soothing chamomile tea or something like that. It turns out that dry January, even just a month, it can be positive for people. It can deliver numerous physical and mental benefits. And some of them you might be aware of, things like more energy during the day. But you get better sleep. Alcohol tends to mess with your sleep patterns. And this is a really interesting one. Your skin is clearer. Your skin is a little more velvety and vibrant.
And, of course, this depends on how much you typically drink anyway, but I'm going to assume, since this is Wisconsin, that it's fairly substantial. If you are a regular drinker, of course, you're going to be feeling irritable or depressed, but, you know, drinking a lot makes you feel irritable and depressed, too. So, you know, one of six of one, half dozen the other. There are also other ways to, of course, cut back your drinking. You don't have to have a dry January. You can have a slightly damp January instead. You know, just promise yourself, like, you know, a little bit, but not very much. And if you're worried about how it's going to affect your social life, you know, there's lots of ways that you can loosen up at a party or, you know, gathering with friends that does not involve drinking alcohol.
Sure. Sharp blow to the head usually does it for me. Then I become much smarter and wittier and sexier.
So, people worry a lot before talking to acquaintances, but they worry more than they should. So that's the first thing to remember. Everybody's insane. So that's don't worry about that. Just, you know, if you're having inhibitions, I mean, that's the whole purpose of alcohol, as far as I can tell, if there's a purpose for it, which is to make us feel less stressed out, right? Yeah. So if that's a problem for you, then find other ways to get to that goal. You know, the single best thing you can do to feel less self-conscious, and I hate to say it, but stop thinking about your screwing self, right? When you're in a social situation, ask people other questions. Basically, kind of find them interesting. And then by doing that, which is kind of like the art of small talk, you'll find that you're less the focus of attention and you'll be thinking about other things less. What are some things you could talk about with other people? Well, it depends on your crowd. But, you know, in my crowd, I don't know, probably Trump. But, I mean, there could be other things, right?
Comic books.
Ghosts. You know?
Magnets.
Magnets. Yeah, all kinds of things. There's lots of things in this world. Talk about black holes or, you know, what would happen if you, I don't know, were standing on the surface of Mercury or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But ultimately, getting into a scene without alcohol can be a big benefit. I mean, sometimes you can actually learn things about people. And present yourself in a positive way.
Yeah, and remember them.
Remember it later. So there's our little tips for those of you who might be trying a dry January.
Good. So I think when I was younger, that's why I drank a fair amount because of the social anxiety and I didn't know how to talk to people or anything.
Yeah,
it made it much easier. You know.
Yeah. So, well, that's where we're all that way.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. I remember that bumper sticker, you know, beer, you know, helping people find, you know, have sexual relationships for the last 5,000 years or whatever. Like, oh, yeah, I'm great. But you know what? You don't need to do that.
No. So you mentioned that humans are social creatures, but also other primates are very social. And
yeah, you bet.
You know that. But some pesky scientists have done some studies of a bunch of different primates from various zoos and how they were affected during the pandemic when people weren't coming around. And my first thought is they'd be happier that they wouldn't have people like staring at them. But it turns out that's not the case. That a lot of the chimps and the bonobos and the gorillas kind of exhibited feelings of, I'm kind of oversimplifying this, but almost like mild depression. They would sleep more. Some of them wouldn't eat. Some of them would hang out by them. Would be alone more often than they used to. And then when people started coming back, they started reversing some of those behaviors.
Interesting.
So they recognize that we're primates too, apparently. Yeah, and it's like, oh, there's something different.
So I had a friend who, when I was in undergraduate, I had a friend who was studying anthropology, and he got a semester to go to the University of Washington in Seattle, and he observed gibbons. He was watching gibbons, watching their behavior and so on. And so my friend had a beard when he started doing that work. And in most simian communities, facial hair is a sign of dominance.
Yeah.
And he started going out with this woman at the time who didn't like the beard. And so he shaved it off. And it was so funny because all the gibbons would just stare right at him. Because staring directly at him was a sign that he was no longer an alpha gibbon. He was now like lower down in the hierarchy because he shaved the beard off. So that in and of itself was interesting to him. He's like took the copious notes on this.
I swear humans are like that. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, there was always these jokes about how you'd elect the president with the best hair and, you know, the tallest one, of course. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what to make of Trump's hair, but and through history, like the people in authority would always have these like giant hats on, of some
sparkly
sort.
Hats,
sparkly giant sparkly hats.
We love the sparkle. Like,
oh, that's the top dog there. Yeah. He's got the biggest hat.
But then today, you know, it's like you look at somebody like, I don't know, David Letterman, you're like, okay, stay away from that guy.
Yeah.
It kind of means something different now. Might do anything.
Right,
know?
Yeah,
when you see a guy with a really
big beard. Yeah, that's kind of the Unabomber effect there. So you were mentioning about the alcohol story that you should just talk to people and ask them questions.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Gladys about this one time, and we both have, you know, we've spent a lot of time interviewing people.
Sure, yeah.
And we found that, like, even in social situations, we kind of switch into interview mode, and then it kind of gets to be an interrogation.
Yeah, right.
So it's hard. It's kind of hard to have that.
What would you say was your biggest failure?
Where were you when the hostages were taken?
Exactly.
No, but it's kind of hard to get that more of that back and forth kind of thing when you're in that mode. But that's how my brain is kind of wired after so many years of doing that stuff.
Hey, here's some positive news.
Yes.
This is from the United States Department of Agriculture. They announced on Wednesday the eradication of the murder hornets in North America.
Oh, the murder hornets.
Yep. The giant, the northern giant hornet hasn't been detected since 2021. So this is a big success story. Includes residents agreeing to place traps on their properties. They also reported sightings. Researchers were capturing live hornets and attaching tiny little radio tracking tags to them. With dental floss. I love that. You know,
really?
Tie a little dental floss tracker to a murder hornet. That's got to take a drink for that.
The really good ones did it with their tongue, too.
Exactly. And they said they would follow it through the forest with its little tracking devices.
Wow.
And so one of the people who was involved in it, a man by the name of Sven Spetchinger, he's a pest program manager at the Washington State Department of Agriculture. He said that, I got to tell you, as an entomologist, I've been doing this for 25 years now, and it is a rare day when the humans actually get a win against the insects. So these guys, the hornets, that is, not the Department of Agriculture people, they can be 2 inches long, and they killed, they're originally from Asia, they killed 42 people in China. Back in 2013 and seriously injured almost 2,000.
Wow.
So in the U.S., about 72 people die from bee and hornet stings every year, according to the NIH. But do we believe them? So they were first detected in North America in B.C., in British Columbia in Canada, in August of 2019.
I was going to say, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, in the B.C. And they were confirmed in Washington State in December 2019.
Okay.
So... And a beekeeper said he was attacked by one around 2020. But anyway, so they've been traveling to North America, they basically have managed to get them under control.
All right.
So there's one positive. You want some positive news? There's your positive news.
Yeah.
Put that in your pipe and smoke.
Humans won, insects 50 million. We're catching up. Some breaking news here. Mike Johnson secures votes to be reelected speaker.
All right. Both of them.
Couple of guys changed their votes from the first ballot, and they gave him the 218 he needed to secure
218 versus
the speaker's gavel.
What's the other side?
I don't know. This is just I'm just looking on C-SPAN here, so I don't want to watch a video.
Oh, okay,
but
it's like 218 to 217.
Yeah, they said
something like
two people changed their votes, and that made the difference.
Yeah.
So, but.
That's what everything is going to be now for the next 2 years.
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
So here's another insect story, if you're not sick of insects already. Have you heard of something called sorcerer ants?
I have not.
Yeah, it's coming to Marvel TV sometime soon. the first thing to know about these guys, they're called velvet ants. But first of all, you should know they're not velvety, and they're not ants. They're actually wasps. They're wingless wasps. But they look very anty, so they've been called that. So here's the thing about these guys. They are so black. They have black and white markings on that are supposed to create the dazzle effect. But they don't just have regular black on them. They have something called ultra black.
Oh.
Ultra black pigmentation, very popular in the early 70s, is rare in the animal kingdom. It helps organisms that have it hide from predators.
Oh.
And it regulates body temperature, and most importantly, it attracts mates. The markings on a female velvet ant absorb nearly all ultraviolet light. So it's not clear that these velvet ants actually need this for camouflage. It's like they just kind of went nuts on it, you know, for no apparent reason. There's no reason why these ants should be ultra black. It doesn't really serve a purpose. It's probably something about once you get, you know, once you start down that path, you know, it just kind of like that whatever is making it that color has a sort of a life of its own. It's so matte that they absorb nearly all visible light.
Wow.
When you order your...
Whoops. Didn't want that.
By the way, it's the scientific name, in case you're curious, is Trematomytilla bifurca.
Of course it is.
Bifurca means two forks. Yeah.
It's like the ultra black. It's kind of like the Spinal Tap cover.
There. Oh,
like,
yes.
You know, how much more black could it be? So. All right, this story, this is not referencing anybody in this room. Just want to make this clear.
All right.
Science confirms know-it-alls typically know less than they think.
Okay.
You're not laughing anymore.
Well, you know, I got to say, I've said this before. I know an awful lot about a narrow range of things.
Yeah. Mile wide and inch deep.
Exactly.
It's out of Columbus, too.
No, the other way. It's a mile deep and an inch wide.
Researchers have discovered that the more confident you feel about your stance, the more likely you are working with incomplete information. Yeah. It's a psychological...
That's every Republican president in my lifetime, except for Nixon.
And all the voters.
Yeah, exactly.
I know how to fix this problem. Yeah. We'll do this.
But that's the thing. If you don't know the nuance of it, then you can be very confident.
Yeah. Yeah. So just get rid of all the foreigners, and then America will be great.
And everyone's like, oh, that guy, he has a clear idea. The dumb idea, but it's pretty clear.
He says it the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. So. Hey, a humpback whale set a record for traversing at least three oceans in more than 8,000 miles. Can you guess what he was looking for?
A mate.
Very good.
That's the only
I know that whale.
Only thing that motivates males. There's no chicks here. Let's get out of this. Let's get out of this ocean.
This blubber fest.
There's a blowhole joke there, but I'm going to leave it alone.
We saw a whale penis when we were in Iceland. There's a museum.
They have a penis museum.
They have a penis museum in Reykjavik, And they go all the way from whale to, I think it was a hamster or something.
Yeah.
They have a little magnifying glass so you can see it. But I got to tell you, that hamster is very busy. So, you know, it's getting it done.
Yeah,
so.
It's not the size. It's how you use it.
Exactly. That's what the hamster says.
To make the little hamsters. So.
Exactly.
Teen condom use is falling, according to a sexual health expert.
Oh, goody.
And she says the reason is that, there's...
It's not natural.
She said it's an alarming decline, and that's according to the World Health Association, because of a lack of sex education is one thing.
Yep.
And that's a big one. Then diminished access to contraceptive methods, another one, and then she's not real sure about this, but she thinks that the pervasiveness of pornography also is and OnlyFans.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of times they don't show that aspect. Or they don't bother.
So their only sex education is seeing images where people aren't being safe.
Yeah, so it seems, like you said, it seems unnatural.
It's wow.
So.
Well, here's another positive piece of information. Despite some of the spectacular things we've seen in the last week, murder rates keep falling across the United States. The number of murders across the U.S. declined sharply for much of 2024, continuing a downward trend, this is according to data collected by the FBI. Murders spiked during the pandemic, and crime became a central focus, we'll all remember, in the 2020 campaign. But polls show that Americans still see it as a major problem, even though the fact of the matter is that, you know, despite these, again, high-profile homicides, the overall numbers are going down. Through October, data collected by the Real-Time Crime Index, based on reports from hundreds of law enforcement agencies, showed a nearly 16% decline in murders from the year before. The FBI's preliminary data for the first half of the year showed an even steeper climb.
Wow. Decline. All right, time for us to declare the weekend. Enjoy your weekend. Hope you're having a good new year, by the way. We didn't wish people a happy new year.
Or happy new year.
Merry new year or whatever. But
happy, merry, merry.
I haven't seen the Jaguar. I don't know who's coming in to do the show, but somebody probably.
Somebody.
Maybe. I don't know. Otherwise, we'll stay here another 3 hours. And
wait, somebody just came in the door.
Regale you with stories.
Mayday, mayday.
With stories about, you know, why Iron Man could beat up the Joker.
Yep, a mile deep and an inch wide.
All right, Pants, it was great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Have a great week, everybody. It is 2 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM. Madison, stick around the kiosk, because next, after that, who cooks for you with
Reverend Velveteen.
All right, we just the word just came in here. So, all right, have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Hey, hot pants. This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, January 3rd.
This is Bird Note. When she was working as an environmental educator, Day Scott says she was more excited about reptiles and plants than birds. But that changed for her after a car accident that resulted in a traumatic brain injury.
After my accident, I wasn't able to talk clearly. I wasn't able to walk without assistance. And one of the things I used to do is go sit in my kitchen dining room area at a really big picture window. And every morning I would have tea and just look out the window.
The birds at Day's feeder put on a show through the window.
I started noticing bird behavior. And it made me laugh because I would see birds basically swatting each other with their wings and fighting over the feeder and being possessive of who could be at the feeder, even if it was like the same species.